All right, everyone, welcome to the 15th episode of the podcast, dude. My name is Aaron Dowd, and today I'm going to share some of the tips that I've learned to help post-production be a little bit easier, a little bit faster. Now, I'm doing this episode because I'm guessing that if you're editing your own podcast, you probably find the post-production process difficult and time-consuming. And I've learned a lot of time-saving tricks in the past couple of years when I was working as a podcast editor, so I'm going to share those with you in today's episode. And my goal is to take you from slow to lightning fast so you can get onto other things that you enjoy doing more. So, welcome to the 14th episode of the podcast, dude. All right, everyone, welcome to the 15th episode. I think I said 14th earlier. Ooh, I'm off to a bad start. Now I gotta edit that out too. Hope you all are having a great day. If my memory's going, that's because, yes, I just turned 30. So I'm super old now. No. Anyways, today's episode, speeding up your post-production. I've got some tips for you. Got a lot of things. Big show today. This outline is massive, massive outline. So we're gonna get started right now. First thing. Number one, use your show outline for show notes. So I know some of you might not be doing extensive show notes like I do them, like a few other people. Not a lot of people do really long show notes, but it's really great. Like I've talked about before, for SEO. It's a great experience for your readers. They can go back and reference things. So if you're going to write an outline for your show, you might as well take that and turn that into show notes that you then post on your website. So I've been doing this. Well, I recently switched. So this week I switched to a mind map and I use a program called MindNode. And if you guys have never seen a mind map, just think about it. The most simple way, there's software for this, but the most simple way is to get a piece of paper, draw a single idea in the middle of the paper, and then maybe draw a line out from it and go to the next idea or the next subtopic, and you just kind of, you branch out. And that's a very simplistic explanation of what a mind map is. But I'll include a link to the image for this mind map that I use. But I actually found that I really like mind mapping for outlining, because I start off with a single topic. So in this case, my idea for the episode was, so, you know, it ended up being 7 tips, but I was just like, some number of tips to make podcast post-production easier. So then I started thinking about, okay, what have I learned that I can share that makes post-production easier? So the first one was, you know, I use my show outline for show notes. So then I went from there. I came up with 6 other tips, and then I broke down from there each one of those tips into different branches. And I kept going, you'll have to see a picture. But anyways, I use MindNode 2 or MindNode Pro, but that's actually MindNode 2 now. So I'll include a link to that in the show notes. But the cool thing about this software, this mind mapping software in particular, is that when I'm done writing the outline, when I'm done with this, I can actually export it as a plain text document in an outline format. So it's got like the main title, the main idea at the top, and then each sub one, depending on how I arrange it on the page, each subtopic goes kind of indented beneath it. So that's really cool. I like it. Another thing you should probably, really, really important for you to learn if you're going to be doing show notes, is Markdown. Now, writing in Markdown can be a really big time saver if you end up needing to export your Markdown as HTML. This is what I have to do when I put the show notes for my show into the Sean West WordPress backend. So I create a post in WordPress. I have to put HTML in there for things like headers, links, bold, italics, and stuff like that. But if you're using something like Simplecast to host your podcast episodes, you can actually just drop the Markdown straight into the show notes section. And it does the work of converting that to HTML for the web page. So that's really, really nice. I'll include a link to a tutorial for Markdown. If you're going to be writing on the web, it's one of those things that is a huge time saver. So study Markdown. There are some great apps that I used, that I have used, I still use, but some great apps that I've used in the past. NVAlt, that's a great one for note-taking. And I really like Typed for writing show notes. It's a very simple writing app. But once when you're done, you can preview how it will look as HTML. And then also you can export your selection as HTML, and it gives you nice clean code, which I then drop into the WordPress post. Okay, so the second tip is get your sound right at the source. The better you can get your recording sounding up front, the less work you'll have to do in post-production. So first off, what you need to do is record locally. And I've said before, it's a good idea to record both locally, and if you're going to be talking to someone over Skype, recording that audio from the Skype call. And what I mean, you know, when I say recording locally, it's recording a track with QuickTime or with GarageBand, something that records just the audio from your microphone going into your computer. So I've said before, you want to record both a local track and the audio from the Skype call. And if you just stick to recording the Skype audio, Skype's kind of unreliable, so you might end up with some weird glitches or drops. And if you do, and you don't have those local recordings, that means you're going to need to go through and edit those drops and those glitches out to clean up the track, and that takes time. So if you want to save time, just avoid that issue entirely by having everyone record local tracks and then putting those together. And you should develop some kind of system for starting and ending at the same time. Ideally, you know, you can do a countdown, have everyone say 1, 2, 3, record. That works pretty well. Otherwise, if you just kind of start whenever you jump on the call, some person starts 3 minutes later, that's a pain in the butt to line up later. So either start, have everyone start at the same time, or have everyone end at the same time. And then just know, so that way you can put it together later in your audio editing program without having to figure out where everything lines up. Second thing, eliminate background noise before you start recording. This isn't necessarily about speed, but background noise is really distracting for your listeners. So in the interest of creating a great experience for them, creating something that they'll enjoy listening to, you should do things like turn off your AC units, turn off your fans. Be careful about recording in a room with noisy computer fans. I know I have a pretty quiet Retina MacBook Pro. Unless I do a lot of intense gaming, the fans don't normally come on. But if you've got like a desktop computer that has fans in it and you're recording relatively close to that, your microphone will probably pick that up. And even noise from certain hard drives too. If you've got an old platter hard drive, that can make noise that'll be picked up. Something that can help with that is if you absolutely can't eliminate a sound source in your room, then set up your microphone so that it's pointing directly away from that sound source. Because that'll give, in most cases, that'll give you the most noise rejection. Because a lot of dynamic mics mostly pick up what's directly in front of them, so what's behind them won't get picked up. Also, it's really important to set your gain levels correctly on the way in. So I shoot for negative 12 dB for the loudest peaks. And you can adjust this by adjusting either if you have a USB mic, the gain knob on your microphone, or if you've got an interface like I do, the gain knob there. Certain programs, if you have a USB microphone that doesn't have a gain knob and you're not using an interface, then the program that you're recording in like GarageBand or Audacity probably has either a input level or like a recording level or a gain adjustment knob. So you want to make sure you adjust that so your loudest points are coming in around negative 12, maybe negative 16. Or if you just see a meter, that's usually about 75% of the way to maximum. You should also be using a pop filter. This will help with those thumps that you hear when someone uses any words that start with P. And that's just breath hitting the diaphragm of the microphone. But then also there are some sibilances that can be caused if you're not using a pop filter. I talk about it a lot. Just buy one. You should also practice good mic technique. And if you don't know what mic technique is, go watch a video. I'll include a link in the show notes. But it's basically maintaining a consistent distance away from the microphone and then also talking at a consistent volume. And you should also be listening to yourself while recording. This is called monitoring. So you can have an idea about what you sound like so that if you start getting off axis, kind of like this, then you'll hear, oh, I don't sound as full, so I better get back on mic. So it's important to listen to yourself while recording. Okay, number three. If you're talking with a guest, you need to avoid talking over each other. Now, it's really tempting when you're having a conversation with someone to just jump in and talk, especially if you get excited about something or you have something you really, really want to say. But this can cause problems. This is something that you may have to go back and edit out. So it's a better idea to just chill out a little bit and wait for the other person to stop talking. And if you both have fast enough internet connections, you can use a video chat to kind of solve this because then you have an idea about if the other person is going to go on for a while, if they're about to wrap up. You have body language as cues. But in general, I would just say if you're talking to one person or a few other people, you can avoid making those awkward sections where someone says, no, you go, no, you go, no, you go. That's really annoying and you'll have to edit that out. So to save time, just let people finish saying what they're going to be saying. And also, you can drop markers for edit points. And this is important if you don't want to go back through and listening to every single minute of your podcast like I do. For all the shows on the Sean West Network, actually, I listen through and I clean up everything that I can because I want to make it a really good experience. But it's really time consuming. So if you don't want to do that, what you can do instead is just learn the keyboard shortcut to drop a marker in whatever program you're using. And I actually, since I use Logic Pro 10, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I know the keyboard shortcut for that, but I'm not familiar with the other ones. But you should check and see if there is a keyboard shortcut. And if you can't drop a marker, then you should for edit points. So that's if someone makes a mistake and says something they want you to take out. If people are talking over each other and you need to edit that out. If someone has to take a break. If you can drop markers, you can go back through and just edit those places instead of having to listen through the whole thing. Moving on. Number four is invest time and money in tools and plugins that solve problems. So I said before, and I'm going to harp on this a lot, I invested in Logic Pro. Started off with 9 back 3 years ago. When I first started, I bought an educational copy from eBay, $200. This was back when the normal versions were, I think, $450, $500. But I did it because I knew it had a lot of tools that I was going to need to learn. And I didn't feel like GarageBand was powerful enough to do the things that I wanted to do quickly. And I still feel that way. You can get things done with GarageBand and Audacity. There are a few other programs. Take a side note. There's a program called, Studio One Prime? That's a digital audio workstation. And I've heard some good things about it. So I downloaded it because I wanted to see if it would be a good program to use for audio editing. And it looks great. It has some, it's free. All you have to do is set up an account to use it. But I couldn't figure out how to import MP3 files or MP4 files or M4A files. Either way, I was trying to drop some audio files from the Shop Talk show into the track and it wouldn't do it. And I couldn't figure out how to add the audio file. So I was like, well, this sucks. I need to go back. I'm not dumb. I went and did a Google search to try to figure it out. But what I really like about Logic Pro, besides the fact that there are tons of features that make the whole podcast editing process faster, is that it really has everything I need. And it does a lot of things that GarageBand just doesn't do. Multi-track editing. There's a keyboard shortcut called Shift F that will select all the regions in front of where the playhead is, which is really, really useful if you go and you make a bunch of edits and you have a lot of different tracks, and then you want to go back earlier in the episode and delete something or move something around. It's $200, which is not, you know, that's a decent amount of money. But if you're going to be editing a podcast every week, if you can save yourself, you know, 2-3 hours over the course of a month, in a year, that's an investment that will pay itself back. So I highly, highly recommend investing. Not, you know, if you don't have a Mac, there's what is it, Audition? I think Adobe has Audition, should have a lot of the same tools. There's Pro Tools, but I love Logic. Okay, off of that tangent, back to tools and plugins. You need to learn the basics of post-production. You don't have to be an expert in, you know, EQ, compression, all these plugins that I'm going to share with you right now, but you need to learn the ideas behind them and how you can use them to make your track sound better. So I'm going to go through the list of all the plugins that I commonly use. First, really important, the EQ plugin. And the EQ plugin allows you to shape the way the track sounds. If you have too much high end or treble, you can use an EQ to reduce that a little bit. If there are certain frequencies that are sticking out and that sound harsh or annoying, you can do a cut to remove them. So I've already done a screencast about this. I've talked about it before, but I'll link to it again because this is something that you guys need to learn about. The ideas will work the same regardless of which audio editing software you're using. Okay, second plugin, compressor. So a compressor can help you control the loudest parts of the track and can also bring up the volume of the quieter parts. So it makes everything a little more even. There's various noise removal plugins depending on the software that you have. I know, Audacity has a plugin or a setting, I think, that will look at the background noise of a track and then use that as kind of like a footprint to remove it from the rest of the track. Like I said, I've not edited podcasts in Audacity, but I've done a little bit of research. So learn how to use that, because constant background noises can be distracting for your listeners. It just degrades the experience and will make them more likely to want to turn off your show. So noise removal is another really, really important plugin. I'll just bring this in here now. I use a plugin suite from iZotope called RX4 that has two plugins that I love. Dialogue Denoiser, which just removes, you know, you have different settings, but it can remove a lot of background noise very, very easily. You don't have to do any messing with it. And then there's another plugin called Declipper, which just, if there's a track that's sent to you or that you have a track that was recorded too hot and it was clipping, it'll kind of fix that and make it sound a little bit less bad. It's not going to make it perfect, but let's see what else. Expander. So the Expander plugin can help remove background noise from a track because it looks at, you can set a threshold and it'll basically say only let volume that goes above this threshold through. So you could set it really low and it'll kind of take out that noise floor. And I'll include a link to a tutorial to that, because Expander was one that took me a little while to understand how to set it, how to use it. So a good tutorial will definitely help you with that. And then finally, another plugin you need to learn how to use is the de-esser plugin. And this can just help remove those harsh S sounds from your track or your co-host track if you're editing, you know, the show for yourself. All right, let's see. What are we on now? Number 5. Learn keyboard shortcuts. There are keyboard shortcuts for nearly everything. And in this case, I'm not going to talk about the keyboard shortcuts that come along with your Mac, because, you know, this is a show about podcasting. But there are a lot of great keyboard shortcuts for your Mac, including like Command Tab to switch between applications, Command Q to quit. You can hit Command Space to open up Spotlight, which will launch programs. I have a couple of programs like, Quicksilver that lets me quickly search for a file and then with a couple of key commands move it somewhere else on my computer. So there's little things like that, but mostly I want to talk about audio editing software because this is a show about post-production. So there are keyboard shortcuts for most of the things that you do in your program. Like in Logic, I know there's a keyboard shortcut X to bring up the mixer where I can access the plugins. There are keyboard shortcuts for movement and zooming. And this was a big game changer for me, because a lot of podcast editing is going to be zooming in, making some edits, then zooming out. scrolling left and right. And you can do a lot of this with a trackpad. But I found that using a trackpad all the time was starting to hurt my hand. So I switched to a mouse. And so if you're using a mouse with a scroll wheel, you can hold down, like, I think option for zooming in and out, and shift for moving left and right. Really, really fantastic. So learn the keyboard shortcuts for everything that you can. Spend some time looking in the menus. Like, I'm actually curious. What do I most use here? Space to start and stop. Enter to go back to the beginning. There's so many things. GarageBand, Audacity, all these have keyboard shortcuts, but it can be a huge, huge time saver and reduce the amount of time that you spend. You might not think that way at the beginning because it only takes a fraction of a second to move your mouse somewhere to click on something. But over time, it adds up. So learn those keyboard shortcuts, not just for the editing tools, but for zoom and movement tools as well. And then depending on the program you have, like in Logic Pro, you can actually create custom shortcuts for almost anything. So if you find yourself going to the menu a lot to do something, or you find yourself opening a tool a lot, maybe map it to something. You know, like I usually have my left hand on the computer and my right hand on the mouse, so I'll map a lot of things around my left hand where it's comfortable. Mixing, like, what are the tools I have set to one and two? I mapped delete to the key in the, tilde key in the top left. And then one is move and two is fade, because I use those two tools a lot. So those are the three keys I hit the most are right next to each other, right where my left hand is. So you can do that. You can do that in Logic. I think you could probably do that in Audition too. I'm not sure about GarageBand and Audacity. Just check for that. Okay. Tagging MP3 files. So Wouter had asked a question about this earlier. He asked me, how do I easily tag episodes? I use a comp, and this is my response. Well, at first I have to qualify that. When you produce a podcast, so you put all the files together, you do some mixing, mastering, and editing, and then you bounce out an MP3 file that ends up going up into iTunes that people download and listen to. Well, you have to add metadata to that with a program. A lot of people do this with iTunes. If you go into iTunes and you right-click and you hit the Get Info button on your file, then you can tag it. And this is just information like who the author is, who the, you know, like artist, artwork, title of the episode, episode number, things like that. But I actually use a combination of there's a $10 app called Tagger that is just specifically for tagging files. And there's another program called Keyboard Maestro that is really, really powerful, can do little macros so that the way I have it set up, I open up Tagger, I drop the MP3 file onto it, and it opens up. It gives me like a list of fields that I can fill out for the various information that iTunes needs for the episode. I hit a keyboard shortcut. In this case, for my episode, it's Shift Option P. And that tells Keyboard Maestro, wherever the cursor is, it goes through a list of steps. And the first one is like, put in the name of the artist. So in this case, it's like Sean West is the artist. And then hit tab. And then put in the name of the album artist. You know, Aaron Dowd. Hit tab again. Put in the name of something. It's the podcast, dude. The title of the podcast. And then hit tab twice. Put in the year. Hit tab one more time. Write in podcast. Keyboard Maestro can actually do all of these things instead of, you know, I don't have to do them. It just runs through and it goes, fills everything out. And then all I have to do is add the artwork myself, because I actually have to hit a plus button and then go and search in Finder and find the artwork, add it to that. And then I go and I put in the title for the episode itself, actually. But that saves me so much time because what I actually did, Sean sent me this for the Sean West podcast because that's how he did it. But I copied this workflow and set up a matching workflow for Lambogol, for The Podcast Dude, for In the Boat with Ben. These are the other shows on the pod, but the Sean West podcast network that I do. So this is just a much, much faster way. It saves me a little bit of time. I'm going to look into doing things like this more often because if you can automate something, you'll save a bunch of time. Keyboard Maestro, check that out. The MP3 app, Tagger, check that out too. I'll include links in the show notes. One other thing about that is if you have artwork that you need to add to each episode, then name it something that you can do a quick search for and find instead of having to open up Finder and navigate through your file system to find it. Okay, moving on. Number 6, use templates for everything. Everything. This was huge for me. This was huge for me when I discovered that I could do this. And there are a bunch of different things you can use templates for in audio editing software. First, plugin templates. So let's say you've got an EQ and a compressor plugin. Well, you drop a track in or you record a track and you've got to make, you know, custom adjustments to various settings for your voice. So you got to do a little bit of compression. You got to set the threshold here. You got to set the makeup gain, the attack and release. That's for the compressor. And then you've got to do a little bit of EQ. So you do a high pass and you cut off some of the low frequencies. There's a spot around 5K that sounds kind of harsh. So you do a little dip. Great, right? Well, next week when you come back and you do the episode, you've got to have those same settings unless something has changed. Well, you can actually save those settings in the plugin as a template, as a custom setting for your voice. You could save custom settings for other people's voices, for your co-hosts. You can actually save whole channel strips. And this is in Logic. Unfortunately, you can't do this in GarageBand. I'm not sure about Audacity. But in Logic, if you set up a bunch of plugins, you can actually save that as a channel strip and then name it. In my case, I would just name it whatever the name of the person is. So I have a channel strip for myself. I have a channel strip for, say, Chris Coyer, for any guest that's ever been on the show. Once I set up all the plugins in the order that I want and it sounds good, instead of saving the individual plugins, I will save the channel strip for that person. So that sometime in the future, if they come back on the show, I can just recall that channel strip setting and I don't have to mess with the plugins. What I actually use for the individual plugin settings is that I know that there's kind of a starting point for EQ and compressor settings. So for EQ, I do a high pass filter and I cut off all the frequencies below 60 Hertz. And then I do a little dip around 400 Hertz because sometimes that sounds a little bit woofy, a little bit muddy, just a little dip. And then I also cut a little bit out at 2200 Hertz and a little bit out at 5000 Hertz. So what I do is I actually saved that as my default. Those settings are already there. I don't have to go and move my mouse and make all those adjustments. It's just a little bit of time saved, but it adds up. Same with the compressor. I know that there are settings that I have for the compressor that are pretty standard. So usually somewhere around -6 or -9, I'll set the threshold at. And then I've got a ratio of, you know, 2:1 or 3:1, attack and release. I just set that as my default. So whenever I open up that compressor plugin, I don't have to make too many adjustments. And if, you know, the compressor settings I use for vocals on podcasts are not the same as the compressor settings I would use, like if I was mixing music, if I was EQing drums or guitar or something like that. But since I'm not doing that most of the time right now anyways, it's okay for me to set something as a default that works well for a podcast vocalist track. And of course, I have to change those things because not every track is the same. Not every voice sounds the same. You know, you have different microphones to account for, but it's a good starting point and it just saves me a couple seconds here and there every single time. So another thing you can do is save project templates. So we're zooming out just a little bit. So we started off really small on the plugin settings, and then we went out to the channel strip settings, which is a collection of plugins. And now we're zooming out to the whole project. So let's say for the Sean West podcast, you've got a track for Ben, you've got a track for Sean, you've got a track for the soundboard, and then you've got a track for music. So what you can do instead of, and I'm sure this is what Sean does, instead of setting up those tracks every single time and putting plugins in, he actually saves that as a project. Doesn't save any audio files in there. Deletes the audio files out of there, but leaves the tracks and the settings all the same, and then saves that as a template to use every single time. So he doesn't have to go back in and recreate everything. And this has been one of the hugest time savers, especially for me when I was working for clients and they would send me some audio files. especially if you have a bunch of different music tracks. It's a pain in the butt to move those things around and drop them in and make all this, like if you have to do automation to fade music in and out, you can save yourself a bunch of time by saving that as a template instead of recreating it every week. Cool. A couple other things I wanted to talk on actually for templates, artwork templates. So I don't know if you're doing a featured image every single week, but if you like to create a featured image for your blog post or for your artwork, you can actually create starter templates for those featured images. So in my case, it's pretty simple, but again, this is about saving seconds, not necessarily minutes, but these add up over time across all your work. So I use Sketch to do my featured images, and I just have a template set up that has a rectangle on it. It's set to 800 by 400 pixels, and it's got some text in it with a font that I normally use, which is Le Monde Courier, I think. The Sean West font. Anyways, so yeah, not a big deal, but you can create artwork templates and also show note templates. So if you're doing show notes for your episode every week, see if there are any pieces of that that you could save in a text expander snippet or just in a template that you can reuse every week. So this could be something like intros, outros, social links, so links to your Twitter, Facebook, stuff like that. Anything that you would have to type every single week should either go in a text expander snippet or in a place where you can just copy and paste it from week to week. So this was big for me when I was doing the Shop Talk show. I don't do the Shop Talk show anymore, but I had a text expander snippet that would actually fill in an outline. Not the whole show, but just the outline of the different headlines. And then I had some place for show links. Do that automatically every week. And it just saved me from taking those 15 and 20 seconds to type that stuff out. And if you've never heard of Text Expander, whew, you guys got to go check out Text Expander. It's amazing. So you can set up these little keyboard shortcuts. Like in my case, I would hit apostrophe STT and it would expand this whole list of the Shop Talk template for, you know, STT. But it would expand a bunch of text, drop it in. You can do a lot of different things with it. It's very, very powerful. Check that out. All right. Last one. Number 7. Write down the steps for your process. So basically, write your process out. I read a great article this past week. It was called Speed Matters. And it was basically about the mental cost of not working quickly. And the idea here is that if you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing or how long something is going to take, it's more likely that you're not going to start or you're not going to finish. It's just this weird mental block that we get. So if you take the time to write out each of the steps that you'll have to go through, you know, for post-production, so getting the files together, doing the editing, bouncing the episode, what settings you need to use when you bounce it, tagging the file, uploading it, writing the show notes, creating the featured image. Write this all in a to-do list that you can reference every week because that'll give you an idea about what comes next. It'll keep you from getting stuck. So I did this when I first started and it helped a lot. I think it'll help give you mental clarity and just make the process a little less intense for your brain. And there's another benefit for this too, besides the fact that after you've done something 5 or 10 times, you're going to be on autopilot and you'll move through your work a little bit faster. That's just muscle memory. That's great. But this process, if you write this out, can be useful if you ever want to hand off your show to an editor or an assistant. Because if you have a clear checklist of things that need to be done for post-production and admin work, then you can just send that to them and say, hey, here's the list. Otherwise, they'll either have to try to figure it out themselves or you'll have to go through and create some kind of list of things that they'll need to be responsible for. So it's good for you, but it can also be good in case you ever want to outsource your editing, your post-production, or your admin work to somebody else. All right, so we're going to wrap up. I'm going to do a quick recap for you guys. So 1, use your show outline for show notes. 2, get your sound right at the source. 3, try to avoid talking over your co-host or guests. Number four, invest time and money in tools and plugins that solve problems, and then learn how to use those tools. Number five, learn keyboard shortcuts. Number six, use templates for everything. Number seven, write down process steps. Write down your process. All right, everybody, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Send me feedback if you guys have any questions or you have any thoughts about this. Aaron@thepodcastdude.com. Love to hear from you guys. Love reading emails. I haven't got to the point where I have a bajillion emails going. Sean knows what I'm talking about. Guys, if you haven't yet, follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am at @thepodcastdude. Hang out, talk to me there, send me stuff. I want to say join the community. We had an awesome webinar last night. Sean did a epic 2-hour webinar about making a living as a hand lettering artist. And we had, we had 500 people in a guest chat room, and it was insane. It was just nuts. It was super, super fun. There were, Sean said there were 1,700 people total, but we couldn't, Justin had to limit the chat to 500 because it was just too much. And I'm sure Justin was doing a phenomenal job of keeping it up and keeping everything going. And I'm sure he's going to work out a way to increase that limit for the future, because it was actually really, really fun, because I know the community isn't free, because it supports the show, and we want to keep people out. We kind of do. We want to get the right people in the community. We want to have the people that are invested, the people that see the value of what we're doing and that want to contribute and also get things out of it. If something's free, there's not usually a whole lot of motivation to be on your best behavior and give and really be invested. So, but all that to say, it was really, really fun to get to interact with a bunch of people who have been listening to our podcast for a long time, but just haven't ever joined the community to hang out in the chat. So it was great. Had a lot of fun. Garrett said, if the community was free, there's a ton of junk. I think you mean there'd be a ton of junk, but you're right. There would be a ton of junk if the community was free. The small investment that is the monthly or the yearly membership helps keep everybody kind of serious. So join the community. It's a great place. Lots of smart people, lots of good-looking people. We have a lot of fun. Supports the shows. You'll get a lot out of it. Right. Sean says, seanwest.com/community. Sorry, guys. Doing it live. The fact that I switched to MindNode for an outline this week threw me off just a little bit. I'm getting used to it. I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with that, because I don't know. It's just a little bit different. What I might end up doing is starting the outline in MindNode and then switching over, exporting it and switching over to kind of fill it out in typed, because I really like that. Okay. I want to read a review that someone was nice enough to leave. This is by, the title is Aaron is a Chill and Authentic Guy. And it is by That Dancer Guy. So thank you, sir. I appreciate that. He says, so I first started listening to this show simply because I wanted to learn more about how I can create and start my own podcast show. But what really kept me listening was Aaron's authenticity. He talks in a way that feels genuine and leads me to believe that he really cares about helping me out. I almost feel like I know Aaron personally, which I hope one day will be true. Podcasting is definitely this guy's passion, and he knows what he's talking about. If you want to create a podcast, subscribe and start listening now. So That Dancer Guy, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Feel free to send me an email, man. Tell me how I can help. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I love hearing from people. All right, I think that's going to do it for the show today. Got a couple of things to talk about in the after show. Let's see, what am I going to do for the rest of the day? I got to edit In the Boat with Ben. Probably need to drink some more coffee. Figure it out. Talk to you guys soon. Okay. If you guys have any questions, throw them in the chat right now. I wasn't watching. Mostly, I wasn't watching the chat because you guys always crack me up and I cannot focus. Brooks, I like this, what Brooks said. Brooks Eggleston said, I mapped edit the podcast to command plus Dowd. That's pretty good, Brooks. Brooks got jokes, man. Brooks is, I think Brooks might be the funniest community member. If anyone, you guys are welcome to argue with me, but I think he might hold that title. Corey's pretty good too. Corey's pretty good. Kyle Arbuckle asked, what did you get for your birthday? Okay. I'm going to answer this question, but I got to tell you guys. First, I don't want you to feel sorry for me. I really only received one gift from a friend, which was a $50 gift card to, what is that? William Sonoma, which is kind of strange. He's a little bit older than I am. But what I ended up buying with that was a Chemex French press, which is pretty freaking sweet. But I will say, it's okay. So I really only got one present. I did order a new pair of running shoes this weekend, $90 Mizuno running shoes, because I decided this weekend that I am going to run a half marathon in February. Because I was talking to my brother, who's currently in the Pacific Northwest. He works for the railroad. I had a good hour and a half conversation with him Saturday. And he was like, hey, yeah, me and a couple of my friends were thinking about running the Cowtown Marathon in Fort Worth. Or a half marathon, really. 13 miles. Would you be interested in that? I was like, well, I don't know, man. Like, it's been a while since I've really been a runner. I used to jog pretty frequently, but I've never done anything like a 5K or a 10K. I was like, maybe I should start off with a 5K or a 10K. He's like, okay, cool. But I was thinking about it and I was like, it's only 13 miles. I can do that. I have 6 months. I know there are training apps. If I just start doing a little bit every day, I can work up, I can build up my strength, and I can do that. And maybe it's part of what I've learned here in the community, but there are a few things now that I think like, oh, there's no way I could do that. I probably, if you'd asked me a year or two ago, I would have been like, yeah, there's no way I could run a half marathon or a marathon. That's just too crazy. But now the way I think about it is more, okay, can I invest the time and is this something I want to do? And I've been saying that I've been wanting to get back into running more. And I have been doing more exercise, but biking. So I bike around a local lake that's just a couple miles from my house. It's about an 8 mile circle, which is great. But I really like running and I really need it because my core, you know, my tummy and my love handles, that's really where I need the most work, and running is a great workout for that. And I don't have any health issues that keep me from running. So I just decided to do it. I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start training. I'll download an app or two. I'll see what works good. I'll read some articles about what I need to eat, you know, best practices, all that kind of stuff. And then I need some new running shoes because the running shoes I have, they were good 3 years ago, but they're worn out now. So that's, how did I get here? So my birthday. Yeah. So I bought myself some shoes for my birthday and that was pretty much it. You know, I spent $40 on sushi yesterday, but I had 8 or 10 friends hanging out. I don't know. I don't need presents. One of my friends actually asked me, he said, you know, what can I get you for your birthday? What do you want? And I was thinking about it. I was like, I really have almost everything that I want. There's nothing I really need. I have a ton of great friends. I have a great drum set. I've got a bunch of audio gear, a good microphone, a good computer. I'm really, really happy with what I have. There's just not a lot of things that I really desire. So I thanked him. I said, you know, if I think of anything, I'll let you know. But really, the things I'm saving for right now are traveling in the future and then a new MacBook, because I would like to get a 15-inch Retina MacBook when the Skylake processors drop, because that would be awesome. Yeah, and Charlie said, this is what getting older is like. If you need, want anything, you just buy it for yourself. Yeah, that's really true. Like, all I really care about is having chocolate milk to drink every day, and I can buy that for myself. So, all right. Back to the real questions. I saw a couple more good ones in here. Kyle Arbuckle asked one earlier before the show. He asked, how do you get started with an outline, or what is your process for creating an outline? So I talked a little bit about this for mind mapping. And you can do this if your brain works kind of like mine. You could do this with mind map, or you could do this in just a plain text document. But I think what I always do is start with the single idea for the episode. So for this episode, the single idea was like my tips for speeding up post-production or making post-production easier. So that was the idea for the episode. So that's what I started with right there in the center. And then I just thought about, okay, what else do I want to talk about? What are those tips? So I branched out, wrote down 6 or 7 things that I thought could help people save time. And so that's the start of the outline, right? Those would be the headlines, or, you know, just the different sections. From there, I look at each one of them individually and say, okay, what do I want to talk about related to that? So one of the things I wrote down was like keyboard shortcuts. Okay, what about keyboard shortcuts? And then I just brain dump everything I can think of. I write it down, and then I go a level further. It's basically like growing a tree around the single idea. You just keep adding different branches and filling things out. And this really helps me, because I think if I tried to sit down and write a blog post from start to finish, a show like this from start to finish, it wouldn't work very well. I'd get stuck somewhere and I'd be overthinking something. It helps me to have that kind of big picture and fill out all the important things before going and getting into like a real detailed level. And I said earlier, I like to collect ideas for topics just during the week. If I'm reading blog posts or I'm reading what people are saying on Twitter, if there's something I think I could do a podcast episode about, then I'll just drop that into my reminders app in a list that I have specifically for podcast titles. And it's not actual titles. It's just like, oh, okay, I could talk about live streaming, or I could talk about interviewing guests, or I could talk about post-production. You know, just different things I could talk about. I like to capture them just so I have something to spark some inspiration when it comes time for me to start writing outlines. Okay, so Kyle, I hope that helps. Ooh, Nathaniel, I like your question. I'm going to scroll back up. I'll tackle this one. Nathaniel asked, how do I explain the value of podcasting to an organization who is totally new to the idea, as I don't personally run any podcasts myself? It's hard to put in a bid estimate on that part of the content creation project. Any thoughts? I think it's really hard to explain to people who are not familiar with podcasting or the value of podcasting how valuable podcasting is, because they haven't experienced it. If you've never experienced, like in this situation, we're both hanging out in a chat room, you get to ask me a question and now I'm answering it. I'm speaking directly to you. That's a really powerful experience. It's a very personal experience, but it scales. Anybody can listen to this. But if the people running your organization or your company, if they're not podcast listeners, it's going to be hard for you to communicate that. I would say you could do some research and find some articles written by some big publications about, you know, how effective podcasting is. You know, look at Serial success. Millions and millions of people. Look at the people that are making money and growing these huge, huge audiences. There's a lot of evidence out there that you could gather, but I don't know. And that's the other thing. There's so much planning that goes into this. If you've never done this before, you're going to run into problems, and it is going to be a large time investment. And it's one of those things that I would start. You could just maybe talk about the topic, say, hey, there are some people doing podcasts that are having a lot of success with it. I think this is something we should explore as a content marketing strategy to build a more personal relationship with our audience, to increase awareness of our company and our brand in the world. You know, it's like blogging. If your company doesn't see the point in blogging, then there's a lot of evidence out there. They have to kind of want to do it. But yeah, that's a good question though, Nathaniel. Thank you for bringing that up. It's tricky. Sean, you mind if I read this out? I don't know why I asked permission. I'm just going to do it. I know he's okay with it. Okay, Sean weighed in. Sean McCabe said, podcasting is about the engagement. It's not about ad revenue, in my opinion. You're in someone's ear every single week. That's powerful. You're establishing your brand. You're building the relationship. It's the reason people will buy from you. Podcasting is like the first six of the Magic of Seven. And if you've never heard of the Magic of Seven, I'll include a link in the show notes. Great idea from Sean West. Nathaniel says, what I'm hearing is that it's hard to put an ROI, return on investment, on podcasting, like social media, blogging, and other content avenues out there. I think it can be. I do think it's a very effective way to build an audience, to grow engagement, to really cement your brand in the minds and hearts of the listeners if you do it in the right way. So, okay, one more. I had got a question. I'd answered a question from a guy named Ben on Twitter the other day. He was curious about whether he should apply effects like EQ, compression, and limiting to his individual tracks, and also if he should use any effects on the master track. So I think this is something that confuses a lot of people, especially if you're brand new to this. The way it works, and this is the way I do it, I apply EQ and compression to each individual track. So each voice gets some EQ and compression. I try to make sure the loudest parts of the track don't hit zero, which is the ceiling, which is where things clip. I try to keep the loudest peaks underneath that ceiling. So every track goes to the master track. And the master track is a combination of all the different tracks. Then on that, I do a little bit more compression, and then I put a limiter on as the very last plugin so that the audio doesn't ever hit clipping. So EQ and compression, any other effects that I need, like if I'm going to do de-essing, if I'm going to do noise removal, I try to make each individual track sound as good as possible before it goes to the master track. And then I'll do like a little bit of compression on the master track and limiting, because anything you do to the master track affects the overall sound, whereas you can tweak things on the individual tracks without affecting the way the other tracks sound. Like I used to do EQ on the master track, but that can be a little bit dangerous because sometimes you'll hear a problem in one of the individual tracks and you'll try to adjust something on the master track, but what you're actually doing is making changes to the overall sound of all the different ones. Maybe the other tracks were perfectly fine, and now the change that you made on the master track makes the other track sound worse. That's kind of abstract, but hopefully that helps. I told him, and I sent him a link to my podcast, and I should have sent him a link to my YouTube channel. Okay, cool. All right, thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for showing up this week. I've got to go write a blog post about, I'm going to call it 30 Things I've Learned in 30 Years. Just to kind of celebrate my 30th birthday. So have an excellent rest of the day. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you again soon.